The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
All right, time for us to turn our attention back to the rugby at the weekend. Brian O'Driscoll is with us. Brian, how are we getting on at out half? What's the crack there?
I think we are struggling at 10, to be brutally honest with you. You know, I think we were all willing to give Billy Burns a second crack at it, after the disappointment in Cardiff. But, listen, it's not just their problem, it's the quality of possession. But I just feel as though the gulf is still so considerable from Johnny Sexton down to the next player. And until we start looking at proper investment in the real talent younger, I actually even think now at this stage it's probably worthwhile giving Jack Carty another go. I feel as though there's lots of calls from, particularly from the West, to get him back in. And his issue is that he's, you know, in some ways he dirtied his bib with regard to the performance in the World Cup, and Andy Farrell was still part of that coaching ticket. So he's left that, you know, negative indelible mark on Andy Farrell. But yet, you know, some of his performances for Connacht have been decent. But I just feel as though we need something to, we need a creativity and a vision that I just don't know at the speed of test match rugby that either the two tens at the weekend are capable of delivering. I just feel as though their ceiling is not where we need it to be. And it's frustrating because they do some good stuff. You know, they do some good things, in fairness to Ross Byrne coming on, like, you know, clutch kicks, you know, you can rely on them for that. And there was other parts of their games. You know, Billy Burns actually started the game quite well with some good contestables, and that was a tactic they went to. But I think as the game plays on, if we're going to beat teams, you're going to have to score tries. You're not going to be able to play a game of kick tennis and beat, you know, more physically imposing teams that have amazing X factor that can score tries or create opportunities for fun. We're going to have to score ourselves. And I think our creative spark is really lacking. And I must say, I feel for the likes of Gary Ringrose because he's having to create for himself in the wider channels. Keith Earls is running after kicks all day. It's just, it can't be easy for those guys in the extremities because their work is really cut out by the time they get their ball.
How much did Jack Carty actually dirty his bib in the World Cup? Like, he was brilliant in that first half against Japan. Granted, everything went wrong in that second half, but it's a bit unfair to be putting it all on the shoulders of Jack Carty.
Yeah, no, it is, of course. There's way more to it than just Jack Carty. I'm not saying that he was to blame for the defeat to Japan. Far from it. But it's when, you know, when you're put into a pivotal role like that, and a chance is taken on you and the team doesn't go well, a huge amount of that onus is put on your shoulders, whether you deserve it or not. And there was, you know, there's plenty of other fingers you could point it at individuals that didn't step up at the right time. In fairness, we played against a great Japan team, but we should have been capable of getting it done. And when that's kind of your last outing in green, it's hard to go back to that to a team that has really, you know, to a player that had difficulty in marshalling his troops in a kind of a low point in Irish rugby, I suppose. And it takes a huge amount of positives to balance the journal. Brilliant individual and collective team performances to get yourself back in the reckoning. I guess the reason I call for him is because he probably presents a little bit more from an attacking mindset point of view. He goes to the line quite aggressively. He's very capable of running with the ball himself. I don't think he does it quite as well as Johnny Sexton, but he definitely takes a step. He hits the pass a little bit more than the two boys at the weekend. And I don't know, maybe it's just time to see whether he deserves that second shot at it, and maybe he can be the one to bring us forward over the next year. But it's nervous times with a key position like that when you don't have guys really putting their hand up and looking to take their opportunity. But we've been spoiled for choice too. We really have. We've had Ronan O'Gara and we've had Johnny Sexton for the last 20 years. And they were two very, very special players. And for all the people calling on Johnny Sexton to be culled, and he, you know, he's past his best is still considerably the best in Ireland by a long shot. And I can understand why he has such an important role within that setup, because we saw the alternative at the weekend. And unfortunately, it's not, you know, the lofty standards that the Irish teams have set over the last 7 or 8 years.
We've been talking about Sexton as a substitute and the first player to come in with 20 minutes to go, ever since Ronan O'Gara suggested that he might be able to extend his career to the World Cup if he was coming off the bench. I mentioned it to Sexton. He bristled, as you would expect. But maybe that's the only way this is going to work out. That, like, if we have a subpar 10 who we need to get some game time into, if Sexton isn't starting but actually is coming off the bench, you might get an extra year out of Johnny Sexton. He might be able to make it all the way to the World Cup coming off the bench. And I think the whole country would feel a bit more confident if, when the out half goes down or gets injured or has a HIA, it's Johnny Sexton rolling off the bench. Like, yeah, okay, this guy's got it.
Right now, if you said to me, would you like Johnny Sexton in the 23 for the World Cup in 2 years' time? I would say yes, I would. Because there's no obvious alternative beyond those younger guys that I feel I'm red in the face talking about, one in particular. But there's something amiss with Ross Burden's younger brother. I'm remiss to even, you know, name him. But, you know, his younger brother, there's something maybe not quite going on that I don't understand, that he hasn't really had his opportunities thus far. Maybe he's capable of a 2 out of 10, you know, every 5 or 6 games. And I guess we just haven't seen that yet. And until Joey Carberry comes back, I guess he's the forgotten man, but, you know, maybe he'll come back and all of a sudden we'll have him, we'll have Frawley, we'll have Harry Byrne, we'll have, you know, other guys raising their game, and all of a sudden we won't have this issue that seems to be presenting itself. But right now, I would say that Johnny Sexton's still important for Rugby World Cup in 2 years' time as a potential 38-year-old, which is, I wouldn't say it's an indictment of where we are, but it's not where you want to be from a strength and depth perspective, that you're having to rely on someone who ultimately, his brain will still tick and work as fast as ever. It's just his durability. And even the subpar performances that people think that he's been churning out, I would disagree with them. I still think he facilitates others to play better around him, and he's in a team that is probably a level below the best teams in the world. Now, being brutally honest, we are a level below them. We're kind of the second tier of countries, that he is still able to bring the best out of that crop of players.
Can Sexton accelerate that development, the sort of next rung down, the players that either are too young or aren't fully trusted yet, that the Harry Burns, as you mentioned there, what can Sexton do, if anything, to actually ensure that they can come into test level rugby and perform and do the right things consistently? Is there anything, like, even from your own experience, was there a sort of succession planning thing going on in your own head when you realized that you would be giving up the jersey at some point?
Well, I think it's a generosity in camp. That's what it is. It's, you know, other than when you're playing against guys, you're not giving away your IP. But when you get into camp and players are trying to learn and improve, and I suppose you can look at it a couple of ways. I think if you hand on that knowledge and that information to those people that are going to be challenging you for your jersey, it works positively twofold. It means that those players are going to get better, and so the team is going to have more competitiveness, but also means that you have to raise your game as well to keep above the next crop coming through. So it forces you to continually evolve as well, and make sure that you don't become complacent in your position, guaranteed your spot. And listen, Johnny is a generous guy. He will absolutely sit down with whoever in camp to go through the necessary video work to get them to understand. But sometimes it's innately about, you know, you kick back into into your learned skills or something that's is part of your personality, your playing type, and particularly in pressurized situations. And I think that's where you have brilliant technique to start with. You revert back to that brilliant technique. It's when you start crabbing into, you know, bad habits, where you're running across the field, you're passing in the direction of your facing, those small things, not being able to stick the inside defenders to create overlaps on the outside. It's those things that will kick in when, you know, the game's getting away from you, going away from you. But I do think that Johnny Sexton would be more than happy to help the next crop coming through, even selfishly, to make sure he gets more out of himself.
We started by having the conversation about the tens. The other thing that people have been talking about is just how pedestrian we are in attack. You're talking about crabbing across the field and the direction the players are passing in. Is that Mike Catt's job to fix that? Are there any signs that the Catt imprint and game plan is emerging yet?
No, I would imagine it's not just on Mike Catt. You know, yes, he's an attack coach and backs coach, but you know, I think, you know, Andy Farrell's probably responsible there too. He's got it casting his overall eye on what's happening. I don't fully know what they're trying to achieve. I think they were a little bit better that there was less zigzagging that we talked about last week, that they were, you know, hitting, coming back and going again, you know, the opposite direction. There was less of that. They were trying to exhaust around the corner. But I was looking back in the video this morning, you know, once we really stressed their defense, you know, take the Kelleher try away from things, because that's a defensive, a line out win and a bounce of the ball that happened to fall into his hands and away he went. So in many ways, there's a bit of an anomaly. I think if you look at the rest of the game where they really felt under pressure, it was only that low situation where, it probably should have been a score. Hugo Keenan probably should have held on to it another yard or two. That checks Doolan for another second, and Lowe has the power to get in there. I know they're very, very small margins. But other than that, I don't think that France were really stretched. They didn't have to scramble very hard. Whereas conversely, you know, the more you look in the game, the more times we had to make last-ditch tackles. We had to, you know, you think about the Willemse off the head, a yard from the line with 2 minutes played in the second half. Like, that's actually bad play from Dupont. You know, he's got the biggest man on the park charging from 2 yards out, pop him the ball. You know, and you know, we talk about how flawless Antoine Dupont was. I thought he had another exceptional game. But he still has the occasional error, but they were able to get away with it. And to be honest with you, France would be filthy with themselves that they allowed that to be a two-point game. You know, they created way more opportunities for them to be able to win by, you know, 7-10. And like I said, they didn't feel as though at any point that, oh my gosh, we're, you know, there's panic, or there was no calling over, you know, short numbers on the blinds at any time. They all seem to be quite contained and have the physical element to the game, being able to meet us attritionally on the advantage line.
Well, that's a very interesting point, because I was tweeting about how there's going to be pressure on the defensive coach. And everyone was like, no, it's the attack that's the problem. I was like, actually, is it? I mean, it looked like we could have lost that game, as you say. 10 points, if that kick had gone over, if that try, which was under the sticks, if Dupont pops that pass. And that would have been a fair reflection, I thought, on the difference in the two sides. Like, the spirit is really strong. Andy Farrell clearly has the ear of his players. They believe in
the spirit really is, sure, in fairness. And sorry to interrupt, but I think it's important to say that as well. For that Ireland team to be able to just lose to a much, much better France team by only 2 points and have a shot at maybe getting a penalty. And you know what? You're looking again, there was a situation where the sub hooker, you know, came offside 40 meters out, and could so easily have been a penalty. And Ireland could have won the game, but God, they wouldn't have deserved it.
No, but the conversation around it would have been totally different. Like, look at that smash and grab win. That's the hallmark of a good side when you're playing badly and you still win. What's our defensive structure like? Because obviously we do have a... it's Easterby's job now exclusively, and we have a very defensive-minded, legendary defensive-minded head coach. Is our structure good? Is it fit for purpose?
No, I think it is. It's okay. It's certainly not one of the major issues. I think our attack game is struggling, to be honest with you, because I can't really understand a major pattern to what we're trying to achieve and where we're trying to create the space. I do think, you know, just to talk before we come back to the defence, while I'm on it, from an attack point of view, I forgot how vital Tadhg Furlong is to our phase play. It's hilarious to think that your tight head prop is one of your best ball players. But yet, his ability to be able to play in those pods, take the ball to the line and throw it out the back is like almost nobody else in the pack. His influence on that phase attack towards the end of the game was significant, and he started creating space out wide. So we can come back to him in a while. But from a defensive point of view, I think, you know, we understand, you know, our spacings. We understand what we're trying to achieve. Then it becomes about being collision winners. You know, I think if you look at the sizes of those two front fives, those two South African boys in the second row versus, you know, Henderson, who had quite a good game, but Tadhg Byrne is a lightweight second row, being brutally honest. And then you throw in Rob Herring, who's a lightweight hooker, against Marchand, who's a beast. Porter, who I think has done well, but gosh, we're looking forward to having Furlong back properly. And then Kian Healy, you know, he always battles hard, but they are physically imposing specimens, you know. Cyril Bai, Mohamed Houas, you know, these are enormous men. And after 60 minutes, it takes its toll. And they just became collision winners. And those extra yard or two over the advantage line, Gregory Aldrett was exceptional. I don't know how he wasn't man of the match. He was phenomenal. His meters after contact are scary. And it's just this, it's an ability to go again, you know, a couple of meters, and the difference, I always say this about the difference between backpedaling versus being on front foot for the next phase is so significant to try scoring opportunities being created.
The attack comes from the forwards winning their collisions and giving you that extra split second to either get a pass away or to use footwork to create some space. And that's the bit where it's kind of hard to judge this Ireland team at the moment, because we had a man sent off against Wales and you kind of reserve judgment, and then there are significant injuries at 9 and 10 who are directing the play, and it's they're new kids essentially, and you reserve judgment. But we'd like to see some patterns emerging. That's really where...
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think as well, just to finish on the defensive side of things, I think you've also to take stock of the fact that we were playing against the magician at nine. Like, some of those over-the-shoulder passes to manipulate the defence in around the ruck at the guard and second defender. Like, I don't care. You know, the All Blacks would have difficulty in there because, you know, what you want to do, he tries to draw you out, but then, you know, the guard misses a beat, and all of a sudden, you know, be it, you know, some of their best ball carriers, be it Olivon or Cretin when he came on, or Challenge, any of those ball carriers are phenomenal once they get ahead of steam, and Aldrett that I obviously mentioned. So I think you're also playing against that. You look at the talent of the individuals now, particularly in that French backline, compared to ours at the moment, and there's a gulf in class. That's the reality of it. And maybe we shouldn't be so shocked that we're having these conversations, because right now France are a better team than us. It feels like they're better than 2 points victors. But with regard to the attacking game, I must say I do feel a bit frustrated that I as an analyst, I can't pull apart a little bit more what exactly we're trying to do. But I do think it'll make a big difference genuinely when Tadhg Furlong comes back in there. And that might seem like a crazy thing to say, but he has an ability to play make on the line like very few others in the team. And I think we're, you know, to be realistic, we're a third or fourth placed team in the Six Nations right at the moment. You know, England, even though they've been, you know, not brilliant for the first 2 weeks, France number one, England number two, Scotland or Wales, one of them three, we're probably three or four. That's where we're pecking order is.
It's interesting when you talk about the comparative quality that France have in the backs to what Ireland have in the backs. And yet Ireland have someone like James Lowe, who has been shooting the lights out season after season at European Cup level. And there is almost a different version of James Lowe, it seems, that we've seen in the Ireland jersey, where this is just completely anecdotal, speaking from watching him. He's just kicking the ball a hell of a lot more for Ireland. And I assume that that's part of the frustration when you're watching Ireland at the moment, that perhaps you're not getting the same standard of player that perhaps wear the blue of Leinster when they line out for Ireland.
Test rugby is very different than club rugby. That's the reality of it as well. It's not, you know, a step up. You don't have like pro 14 and then a step up to European rugby and then a step up to... It's an enormous leap up to test rugby, where the best players are going hammer and tongs at one another. And so there's probably a combination of that, it being more challenging for them, but also, you know, the... the expectation to kick the ball a lot. Now, I don't know what stats they're producing about, you know, teams that are kicking the ball more tend to be winning more, don't play any, you know, possession-based stuff in your own half. That seems to be a real focus. We kicked the ball, but felt like an awful lot at the weekend. And he's gotten a very effective kicking game. It wasn't perfect, but think about some of the 50, 60-meter punts and good line chase. You know, that was a tactic that we were looking to incorporate the whole game. It wasn't just for the first 20 minutes or half an hour. It's something that we tried to force pressure on them, force them into bad kick back and not get bored of a game of kick tennis. But James Lowe, yes, he's inexperienced. I think the defensive side of his game is a little bit of a concern. There's no doubt he's not a good tackler. He's a grabber. You know, he kind of reaches with his arms an awful lot. Rarely do you see him putting in a really aggressive shot with his shoulder. He kind of scrags people down. And, you know, for the Peno try, he's got to do better than that on Doolan. He doesn't have to necessarily put him to ground, but he's got to stop him and wait for the cavalry to come across. And Ed Byrne finished that tackle off, but he left Ed Byrne way too much work to be done. So I think that side of the game, there's nothing new there. I think he struggled with his defensive side of his game, the reading part. But even now, the collision winning. He's a big unit, so I just wonder about his actual tackle technique. I don't think it is what it needs to be. But he's busy with the ball, and he offers something that nobody else in our backline offers, where he can eke out that extra 2 or 3 yards, even from a standing start, just before he goes into that hitch kick. You know that he's not going to be knocked backwards. He is a lump, and there's something... lovely to have in a player that's capable of eking out those difficult yards for you, even a guy that plays on the wing for you.
And the point really isn't about Lowe's quality whatsoever. It's more to do with how he fits into the attacking structure, which we're struggling to identify here. And I guess he's probably just the epitome of the frustration that we have. Like, how long, for example, did it take for Joe Schmidt's stamp to be place in Ireland and for you to realise it? Like, have we gone past that point already with Andy Farrell where we should have seen a stamp by now?
Yeah, I think we probably should have seen a stamp by now, which is a bit frustrating. It's kind of tricky because there's been this, because of the long layoff, I don't know whether we should be more patient with it or whether that has any determining factor on you know, the impact that Andy Farrell has had since he's come in. It's coming up to 18 months since he's taken the reins. And we've seen some little signs, some glimmers of hope here and there, but they're kind of sporadic rather than necessarily fully understanding what we're trying to achieve and how we're trying to create space for some of our more exciting players. You know, I mentioned the frustration of Keith Earls. He's, you know, think about him 2 years ago, how much ball he got with in space and with time in that Grand Slam year when he was, I think, Irish Player of the Year. He chases box kicks and chases other kicks and then gets an occasional scrap out in the wing and is told create something with that. I feel for him because it's, you know, maybe he hasn't done everything the way he would have anticipated he would, but also he's getting scant opportunity to be the player he wants to be. So I think you can look at one other aspect as well. And again, I think, I don't know, someone sent me a message. I think France had, was it 11 offloads and Ireland had 3. And you know, we'll be talking about this until the cows come home, that the reality is we need to become an offloading team. We've got to make it more challenging for the opposition. We've got to run those support lines expecting offloads the way we know Anton Dupont runs that aggressive upfield line expecting line breaks. We've got to start running those, secure your ruck ball if that offload doesn't happen. But we're not going to ever be able to compete with the big teams unless we push things a little bit more, unless we play with this fast tempo, unless we try and change the point of contact. We're back to playing 15, 20 rooks and not going anywhere. And I think the last segment said it all. You know, we had a line out start, the kick to touch. We got a final opportunity. Robbie Henshaw, brilliant carry over the advantage line on the 40-meter line. I thought, okay, we're in, you know, penalty territory here. And we ended up 20 meters back from there, running over and back. and not really doing anything and not looking as though we were ever going to create anything other than that hard line. So there's a creative issue, no doubt. And that comes from personnel, comes from style of play and systems and attacking weaponry and know-how. And I think it's probably a combination of the two is where we're missing.
The skill set's there. These players could offload if they were being challenged to buy the coaching tickets.
Well, we're seeing it at Leinster and Munster, aren't we? Predominantly. I think you think about the style that Andy Friend has got Connacht playing. Ulster are playing with this huge confidence that they've lost once this season in the Pro 14. And so, there's capabilities in them. I just feel as though, you know, what's the mentality? What does Stuart Lancaster do when he's going in? And I know it's a different coaching ticket because he gets them every day and he's able to hone those skills. But is he saying throw the 50-50s or is he saying throw the 60-40s? And yes, test match rugby is different. You can't go playing sevens. But I think we've got to look at evolving. And until we, you know, change the point of contact and create more chances for ourselves by getting line breaks, we're going to lose those arm wrestles against the more physically imposing teams. I think we've got to be, you know, risk takers going forward. And you can't be bottom of the pile on offloads year on year, which ordinarily we are.
We're actually repeating the same 4 years every we keep looking for, we want the next Johnny Sexton to come along. So that will give us a 40% chance of winning a World Cup quarterfinal. And it's like that culture is wrong. We need to completely revisit our style, because ultimately South Africa are going to be bigger than us, probably Australia mostly will be bigger than us. It turns out the French are now way bigger than us because they're backed by the South Africans. England are going to be bigger than us, and likely the All Blacks too. So what is our culture? How are we going to try and beat them? And I don't really see the evolution yet of a game plan or players who might be capable of doing something that would stress those teams getting picked for the team.
You're right, Joe. We do have this conversation every 4 years or, you know, in a cycle. But nothing changes. All of a sudden, just because things have gone well in the interim, you know, from maybe the 2015 World Cup to 2019, we do talk about what's being taught at grassroots and the ability for underage teams to pass the ball and offload the ball and focus on their skill set. And being brutally honest, I don't know what is being taught at that level now. I've got a young fella coming through that I'm sure at some point will start playing rugby and I'll start getting involved in coaching in some capacity there and I'll get a better understanding of it. But you think about the focus in Australia and New Zealand in particular. And if you look at Wales as well, the quality of their passing across the board is better than ours. It is. I think, you know, some individuals within the Irish setup are very good passers or very good offloaders, but en masse, I don't think that, you know, we're at the skill level of where we need to be competing year in, year out with the likes of Australia. If you think about Australia, they're not a physically imposing team. We've got some big, you know, Polynesian guys, yes. We've got a couple of big units ourselves. So you feel as though physically you can compete with them, but it does feel as though their skill set is better and maybe drier conditions, you know, but it's not just that. It's growing up and implementing that at a very young age to make sure that that is, you know, second nature, that you're not afraid of that split second decision to throw a pass, a 15 meter pass off your left side because you're not sure about the accuracy of it. You've got to expel that from your mindset and just have the ability, the natural ability to throw that without giving it a second thought.
Are you more pessimistic now after two games than you were before the start of the tournament?
I'm conscious of how the soundbite ends. Am I more pessimistic? I'm probably on par because I do feel as though what we did against Wales, I took comfort in the fact that there's great spirit in this Irish team. That is guaranteed. And there's something very comforting in knowing that that's there. Even when there's a dip in skill level and quality, to still have an ability to stay in the fight is one of the more honourable traits in any team. And so you've got to pay respect to the fact that that is still very much in existence in the individuals and in the collective. However, an understanding of where the next evolution comes from, I think I'm a bit frustrated and a bit more despondent on that, because even against Wales, you know, the one try we did score came from a Robbie Henshaw break and offload. But then that's one try. One try at the weekend where it was a line out loss and it bounced up to us and our hooker sprints in from 25 meters. We're not creating chances for ourselves. You can't kick yourself to success. Those days are gone. You've got to score tries, and we've got to find a way to bring the best out of the crop of players that we have. And there's more in Robbie, there's more in Gary Ringrose. There's more in Jordan Larmour. There's more in Keenan, in Earls. There is. Just have to give them a chance. And all it is half a second or half a yard more of an opportunity to run on a soft shoulder and get an offload. But I do feel a bit frustrated that the evolution hasn't been a bit quicker than maybe we would have hoped for.
I have one last question. There's a bunch of 20, 21 and 22-year-old out-halves at the moment, none of whom are actually getting a lot of game time at out-half for the provinces. And many of whom, the Munster ones in particular, unless they move JJ Hanrahan on, none of them are going to get game time if Joey Carberry comes back. What do you do? Do we send them around Europe?
So here's a question with regard to Munster. So similarly to Harry Byrne being behind his brother in Leinster, what are we missing? What are you and I and the public at large missing that they don't get to see at training with Ben Healy and Harry Byrne? Is there something, is there a reason for holding them back, that they're just lacking in something, that they're looking at us having this conversation going, God, they know nothing, you know, because there's some aspects that... it's just there's no confidence from the coaches that they're missing out on something. Why is JJ Hanrahan being selected for the big games ahead of Ben Healy when he's shown this great potential? It's because there's not this investment in 4 years' time. Johan van Graan is thinking about, I need to try and win a league this year. I need to get further than a quarterfinal or a semifinal of European Cup. I need to try and win something to legitimize my 3 or 4 year reign as Munster coach. And so he's gone with the more secure option, or the guy that he feels is capable of navigating his team in doing so. I think that's probably what's happening in Leinster as well. Ross Byrne's a facilitator for others to perform. There's so much firepower elsewhere that they don't need another guy, another bit of X factor, another guy that, you know, could win you a game but has the potential to lose you a game. So there's something that we're missing. And until these guys obviously break into their provincial teams properly, and until they ultimately get their opportunity international, we're sort of in the dark.
So do you, if you're the IRFU, do you try and place them for a year somewhere where they're going to play a full season, like Championship rugby in England, or?
Well, what happens with Munster if JJ Hanrahan gets, you know, touch wood, an ACL injury? And Ben Healy's off. Yeah, you get called back. But you've got to have good quality. Two minimum, and ideally three players of decent quality. Because we're going to have these injuries. So, I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's a different dynamic in Leinster as well, because the second and third choice out halves are brothers. And I'm sure that makes it all the more difficult to make sure that that situation is treated pretty gently, that you don't antagonize a sibling relationship as well as, you know, as trying to bring through the quality. But with regard to, you know, Ben Healy and Crowley down in Munster, you have to at some point look, where's our investment piece in the longer term? And, you know, Craig Casey is starting to break through. He's getting more cameos. And sometimes you need a long-term injury for those players to actually get their break properly, which is an awful thing to have to rely on. But sometimes those you know, 3 month injuries are where players come and shine. And also they know then, well, I don't have to perform this weekend because I'll have the jersey the following week, no matter what. And that's when you really excel and that pressure valve is released. And I think, you know, I don't know what Conor Murray's injury is like, but, you know, Craig Casey, all he needs is one great shot at playing internationally. He didn't get a chance at the weekend. If he plays in the next one, he gets 15 or 20 minutes and he goes really well. Well, he's halfway to being a regular international going forward because we know his quality. So sometimes you have to wait for your opportunity, as frustrating as it might be, because someone has to sit out a period of time. And for you and I, that seems wrong, but that's the reality of professional rugby.
So just to clarify finally, Brian, who are you going for as your halfback pairing against Italy? Is it Jack Carty and Conor Murray?
So is this mine or is this Andy Farrell's? This is
yours.
Mine.
Yeah, yours.
I think you'd have to, I'd have to look at trying to change up. This is an opportunity. Italy were more impressive against England, and they've got a nice 10 in Garbisi themselves. You know, I have to say I was looking a bit enviously at him. He's a bit of a loose kicking game, but he is only 20. But there's a chance to go over, and they will feel, gosh, Ireland are ripe for the taking potentially. And, you know, we catch them in Italy, and they're, you know, low on confidence. They've lost their first two. Why not? Whereas I feel as though it's a good game for Jack Carty as well. I don't think he's going to get huge pressure from, you know, the Italian back row. They don't have this crazy line speed. I think he'll be allowed to play his game a little bit and build a bit of confidence that I'm sure he lost the last time he was wearing a green jersey. So I think, to be honest with you, I would be looking at starting him, and I'd probably give him the security of Conor Murray if he is back fit. I think it's tricky to play new combinations at the best of times, and particularly a halfback at really key positions like that. So I think you go with a bit of security and the new blood and see how we get on. It feels as though it's definitely worth a shot because as much as, you know, the other two guys are capable of good moments, I just think we need something for a concerted period of 80 minutes. And I don't know if they're the guys to deliver that internationally, personally.
If Wayne Pivac turns out to be a good Wales coach, will Ireland and Scotland always regret allowing him to gently ease his way into the Six Nations with two wins by both handing him victory by having men stupidly sent off?
Yeah, like you... You know, you think about that Wales team. Look, gosh, we should have beaten them. If we had 15 men, we should have beaten them by seven or eight points. They're just shows that a little bit of confidence now. All of a sudden, they start talking about the slam over in Wales. But that's Six Nations as well. You know, you get giddy after a couple of games when you've won some, irrespective of the manner in which you've won. But you know, credit to them as well over it. That's a good Scotland team. Tell you, we're going to find it tough in Murrayfield. We're going to find it very tough against them. But credit, you know, that they didn't pack it in, and the guys that came off the bench did a good job. And so that's all you need as a coach. You need a little bit of luck sometimes. Maybe he tell you that he got bad luck in his first 10 games. Well, he's gotten all his luck in the last two weekends, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's being touted as the next Warren Gatland.
Yeah, and half the team are going to be on the Lions as well, and we'll all be delighted for them. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of lads. Brian, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Nice, and cheers, lads. Bye.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.